During the next 2 weeks, we're going to hear plenty in the news about the progress, or lack of, that Washington's legislative leaders are making in writing a new state budget. June 30th is the end of the state's fiscal year. If there's no budget, there's no money, and the government will have to cut back to the most basic services. Most of the state budget goes to K-12 education, and you've probably heard reference to something called McCleary. That's the name of the plaintiff in an education funding lawsuit that went to the state Supreme Court. We asked the state's new school superintendent, Chris Rakedahl, to tell us what he thinks parents and taxpayers think McCleary really means.
I think there's a big misconception. I think the average parent says, well, McCleary means they're going to finally start fully funding our schools. That's not actually what the court said. The court didn't say there's too much money or too little money. They said, legislature, you've written the definition of basic ed, but you're not paying for it. You're relying on local levies to pay for it. So the only mathematical thing you have to do here is get the state to pick up all the cost of the current basic ed definition. So this is why I've been so cautious for the last year in telling people you could solve a court case and not really see any meaningful change in your schools, and I don't think people are going to tolerate that. I think they expect the system to keep making strides. That's why we want to lay out a vision for something much bigger than the court case.
And Rakedahl has done just that. He's put out a white paper with his vision for the state's schools for at least the next 6 years.
It would be inappropriate to just solve the basic math of this court case and then say everything's great when we still have 21% of our students not graduating on time, tons of jobs not being filled, what I would call kind of a false expectation that every student is headed to universities when we need lots of kids to be excited about lots of things, including the trades and lots of other jobs. So it's really meant to say, what would we do if we could design this system from scratch now that we're starting to invest more significantly in it?
And so you make the case that then there's much harder work of systemically restructuring our K-12 education system in Washington. How would you restructure it?
Well, if you look at sort of what I would argue are the better models around the world. So where are places that are catching us faster than others? You see them doing things that are quite different than the way we practice. They bring in sometimes longer school days and school years, although not always, but generally those systems are at about 1,100 to 1,200 instructional hours a year. We're still using the same 1,000 hours we've used for decades. And one of the things they fill up in that time is they bring universal second language acquisition to every student. We treat second language in this state like it's almost a fault. If you come to us speaking a different language, well, you must learn English in order to succeed in our schools. But we don't tell native English speakers, you know, it's a powerful thing to have a second language. And rather than just have you take 2 years of it in high school to meet a university admissions requirement, let's really get you at least conversant, if not fluent, in a second language, and then our students would be far more globally competitive. It would honor people who come here in immigrant communities, and everyone would have this power of learning dual language. It's a notion, I think, of countries that are beginning to exceed our performance, and we should be doing this. Obviously, we couldn't turn this on tomorrow. There are districts doing it. Some on a limited basis with their own resources. Some are using federal dollars because they do have large immigrant populations, so it's mostly a learning English kind of notion. Some do it with immersion, so they have students learning in a second language their core content, whether it's social studies, math, or science. Some do it by separating students and doing after-school programs. So part of what we have to do here on the policy side is really go mine it for the best practices and scalability. What would it look like to phase this in over time? Because the state wouldn't have that price tag available to them even in 6 years all at once. So there's a big bit of policy work to do. But we laid out the vision to say we got to know where we're going if we're going to start working on the right parts today.
So you've got a pretty ambitious vision. Do you think the consensus is with you in the legislature, within the public schools around the state? Or do they not want to do that extra work in order to get us there?
No, I think everyone's ready to keep evolving. I think one of the words that's been sort of overused is reform, as if somebody knows how to do it and everyone else resists it. And I really don't respect that. I think you have a ton of people, mostly in classrooms, who are reforming all the time. They're constantly trying to create better teaching and learning processes. And you have people outside of education who want some big changes. They they can't imagine investing billions more and getting the same exact outcomes. And so everyone has an interest here to keep evolving the system and moving it as we become more global, and we ask different things of students. So far, the embrace has been very positive. People want the detail, though, which is why we didn't say, you know, let's do this tomorrow. We put it in multiple phases so that we could create a very inclusive process over the next several years to get people to weigh in. How would we do this effectively? What kind of resource would it take? How would we phase it? So we don't even think it's appropriate to have every answer today. We just needed to push the large vision so everyone can begin to see, wow, that's an education system that would be remarkably different than it is today. And if they can buy into the vision, they'll work on the detail. And if they work on the detail, they're obligated to pay for it.
So where do you think, I haven't had kids in the public schools for a while. My kids are a lot older. Your kids are much younger. So you get to see it every day. What do the schools do well, and where do you think they most need the help? And I mean sort of on the everyday level.
Uh-huh. Our schools are so remarkably different from when you and I went to school. I guarantee you this. So one of the things is all of the science that they've brought to reading and writing. I know that sounds a little strange, but we know so much more about student development and brain development. So the fact that we're using very critical interim assessments to know where students are in terms of reading and writing, a lot of schools are doing what's called walk to read. So they're identifying students' strengths and they're putting them in groups so that they can excel. That way they're not boring the advancing kids and they're not overstraining the kids who need additional interventions, but they're actually putting them in groups where they can target intervention to where they're at. This is happening in math as well. And, of course, we've brought in lots more science content in the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. So our schools on the cognitive side are very transformed. Our teachers are using data like they've never used before. And I'd say the latest innovation and the latest wave is getting our teachers to understand more the social and emotional development of kids so they can understand, hey, this student is struggling in math because there's behavior challenges. And back in the day, we just say, kick the kid out. He's a behavior problem. Today, we know that there's lots potentially behind that. And bringing a kid a targeted intervention for their behavior, their mental health, if you can shore that up, then suddenly we see the student producing a better cognitive outcome. So there's just so much more data and research in our schools than there's ever been.
Is that a good thing necessarily? Sometimes too much data can be overwhelming.
Well, I think it's positive if you give teachers the time to process it and build action plans for individual kids. It's not helpful if you just overwhelm them with data and you don't transform the day at all. Teachers actually need time to process that data, to work in small teams, to create targeted interventions for students. And the state used to pay for this, right? I mean, before the crisis of 2008 and 2009, the state used to pay for professional development for teachers, and now that's almost completely a local decision. And therefore, you had districts who do it really well and districts who don't do it so well. And that's part of the reason we pushed so hard for a basic ed funding plan that restores significant professional development for our educators.
Chris Rakedahl is Washington State School Superintendent. You can hear several minutes more of our conversation with him on our website. Go to the Inland Journal page.